7654321 0.
Welcome to a Trending Topics Network presentation of Toons Game Time for Friday, January 8th, 2016. It's an all-new year, and as usual, you can find us on the TrendingTopicsNetwork.com feed, which you can find on iTunes by searching for Trending Topics Network, or you can find us at Toonshow.com, where really we post just about everything that we do here. At Toon Show and Toons and Game Time and all that fun stuff. All new year. We're really looking forward to this year coming up here. A little bit weird this morning. I have my guest. I'm going to bring him on right off the bat. But if you'd like to get a hold of the show or be on the show, it's easy to do. Go to toonshow.com. You can find all the contact information you could possibly ever want or need. Toonshow@gmail.com. Our Skype ID is toonshow. Our Facebook.com page is actually Toon Show as well, so be sure to check that out. Also, on your iTunes or favorite mobile device, you can actually go to the show notes, which are at toonshow.com. If you follow the podcast's links under there, podcast Toon Shows, you can find the show notes to Game Time with links to the RSS feeds and iTunes as well to the direct iTunes page for Toon Show. Before we get too far into that, we're going to actually get on with the show, because today I have a very special guest, a very special returning guest, that is, from GameBlock.com. He is Ryan Hamner. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, how you doing, man? Happy 2016.
Yeah, it's a fun time. It's already been like a busy year, and only a week into it. It's kind of crazy.
Especially video game-wise, it feels like, we're 1 week in, and we're just getting hammered with new news every single day.
It's weird, too, the news that we are getting. It's news that kind of comes out of left field. And yet, I called this episode buying season, because a lot of it has to do with either purchasing or purchases that can be made in the future and things like that. And it seems like a lot of that information is actually coming out right now with VR right around the corner. You've got Activision continuing their crazy buying spree, apparently. A lot of stories that we're going to get into. But have you bought anything recently? Have you been playing a whole lot?
You know, I broke down and bought Black Ops 3 a couple of weeks ago. I usually wait with Call of Duty every year because there's usually other stuff out. And I only play for the single-player campaign, so multiplayer doesn't really, you know, isn't a factor at all. So I just wait until the price drops enough, and then I pick that up. So I played that and finished that probably about a week ago.
Nice, nice. And I've actually, I dropped the $24 this week on NHL 16 because they had the big holiday sale on PlayStation Store. If you missed out on that, I feel bad for you because they had a lot of good deals on there.
A lot of good deals on there.
And also, since the last show, I actually did pick up Citizens of Earth, which is really, really fun. And I actually made my top five list for GameBlock.com of my games of the year. So I picked it up, I believe, for either $3 or $4.
Wow.
And I just had an absolute blast with it. I'm still playing it, but it's just so funny because it's very Japanese RPG, very Final Fantasy VI in the feel, but with kind of modern-day kind of stupid humor thrown in there. So it's a really good time. But we'll talk a little bit about that stuff later. Because GameBlock.com, you actually do have a whole series of Game of the Year reviews for 2015. Was there anything on this year's list that kind of threw you off, that surprised you, that some of your guests contributors actually had in there?
Yeah, Paul Clemente from over on ConstructsNunchucks.com had a game that I had never even heard of on his list called Soma. And I haven't had a chance to pick it up myself yet, but just his description alone, is enough to make me want this game, because he compared it to the TV show Lost.
Nice.
And right there, I'm a massive Lost fan, even though it had its problems, and I fully acknowledge that it had its problems, but the first two seasons of Lost is arguably the greatest TV I've ever watched.
Nice.
So as soon as I saw he put that in his review, I'm like, I have to play this game. I think it's up on the PSN for sale. Assuming the PSN is working right now, you could pick that up. But yeah, I'm definitely going to look into that. And then your number one of Rocket League, certainly I see exactly where you're coming from, but I did not see that making anyone's number one list. But I mean, the points you make on it, I can totally get it. I mean, it should be in the discussion. It's a great game.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of times people just get caught up in the whole hoopla of AAA titles need to be near the top from the biggest studios. And a lot of times we forget the whole reason why we play video games in the first place, which is really to have fun. And for me, the reason why I put Rocket League at the top was simply because there was not a single way that I didn't play that game that I just simply did not have fun. Whether I put in the article, whether I was playing by myself, whether I was playing somebody online, or whether I was playing on the couch here beside my son, or my daughter, it was just a blast. It's completely accessible to anybody, because I actually saw somebody on Facebook, one of my friends there, who I won't name because I don't know if he's okay with me using his name, but he called it something along the lines of, it's like watching babies play with knives. You just can't put it down and you can't stop watching, because it's one of the simplest things, and yet it works so well. And there wasn't a whole lot about it. It's very NBA Jam-ish in a way, in the arcade-y kind of feel. It's also just super fun. It's a sports game that's not a sports game.
It's got two really important factors going towards it. First of all, the presentation is awesome. You know, it's fun to watch. If you've got somebody like, if my daughter feels like sitting down and watching me play a video game, it's got good sound effects. It's got cool comments being made. It's fun and bright and lots of cool colors and explosions. It's just a fun visual game to sit back and watch. And then the other big factor that's a huge plus for it is it's fast.
Yes.
You know, a match of, in Rocket League takes like what, load up time and everything, 10 minutes, you can play one match.
Yeah, easily.
I mean, it's perfect if you're waiting for somebody to get ready to go out, or, you know, somebody's doing something and you've just got X amount of time. You've got such a short amount of time to play a game, yet that's exactly what you want to do while you're waiting. You can play a game of Rocket League in and out in 10 minutes, and then, hey, we're out the door. Let's go do what we were going to do. I mean, it's just such a huge factor that you can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to mention the fact that you can play one-on-one, or you can go four-on-four. You can play any combination.
Yeah.
It's just really super fun, and it's something that came completely out of left field that nobody even expected. I doubt even Harmonix actually expected. Is that who made it? I think it's Harmonix. I'm pretty sure. I'm getting all my things up because I was just thinking about Rock Band 4 the other day, and I was like, Harmonix?
Yeah.
And I just, whatever. But yeah, I mean, nobody expected Rocket League, of all the games that were coming out, to be as big a hit as it was. And I think that speaks to the game itself. The reason why it was a hit is just because it was done pretty much to perfection. It was exactly what you would expect. It was a little bit more in a lot of cases. So.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and that's a PlayStation 4 exclusive, right?
They're actually releasing it, I believe, on Xbox One in the near future if they haven't already.
Okay. So. I was going to say, up to this point, I mean, it's just been on PS4. You could make a case that is the best PlayStation 4 exclusive we've seen. And when you consider some of the titles that were, you know, bragged about before the PS4 was released, I'm talking The Order 1886, Knack, Infamous. I mean, those are some huge games that had a ton of money put into them, and they were developed in-house by Sony. Sony-owned studios. And Rocket League has been way better than any of those games.
Yeah, it really did. And one of the things I think that it did have going for it is that The developers realized what they could do and couldn't do and didn't try to go too far. They stuck with the formula that they wanted to have in the game and didn't try to bell and whistle it George Lucas it to death.
That's a great
one. But that's really what they did. And thanks for having me on your website, asking me for my opinion. And really, the listeners should all go to GameBlock.com, which is GameBlock with a hyphen in between. .com, and check out the Game of the Year reviews, because I'm not sure that many games outside of Fallout 4, maybe The Witcher, were actually repeated.
Metal Gear Solid turned up twice, Fallout turned up a couple of times, but and that's kind of like what is at the heart of what I want GameBlock to be. Is you can go to IGN and all these other sites and get, kind of the more traditional lists. But this is by just regular guys like the listeners and you and me out there playing these games. We only have X amount of time to play a game. We don't have access to these vast libraries to play every single game out there. So, you're getting a unique perspective, and the returns on the Game of the Year stuff really displays that, I think.
Absolutely. It is. The perspective thing is huge when it comes to game, because we all get different experiences. And I actually was listening to a podcast yesterday while trying not to injure myself with saws and things like that. And one of the things they actually touched on, I believe it was the Giant Bombs, Giant Beastcast, I believe is which one it was. But they talked about how even whatever it is that you're going through in life at the time can affect your perception of a game. And I think that's important. The gaming experience goes far beyond the amount of time that you put into the controller. It goes, and it's affected by the outside world, and it, in a way, can actually affect the world around you. The perspective that you have even on different things in life. And that's one of the arguments that my wife and I have all the time, because she's into theater. And I play video games, and she views video games as a total waste of time. And one of the things I told her the one time, I'm like, you can't criticize video games as a medium. And, you simply can't do it, because that would be like me saying that watching a movie or going to a play is completely ridiculous and a total waste of time, because The Gods Might Be Crazy from 1972 was a bad movie. It just doesn't make sense. It's just a different medium. You can pick up different things, different perspectives, different points of view on life in general through video games, or you can go into it just to be entertained. And there's nothing wrong with either of those.
Yeah, the video games have come such a far way since Mario was going down sewer pipes. It's just, there's stories that are being told. There's emotions being conveyed. It's really... They've just gone to a level I never would have thought possible when we were, pointing the zapper at the screen and shooting ducks. It's just come so far.
Yeah, it really has. And with that, we're actually going to get into the news, because we have a pretty big plate, I guess, ahead of us here for this show. We are going to do the news. We are going to do a little bit of a review of the news from 2015, because a lot of big things happened, and we're going to discuss some of those. As well as listeners and their actual top stories of the year, which you can bet Hideo Kojima is going to make an appearance on those. But right now, we're going to get into the first story of the afternoon. Activision Blizzard has bought Major League Gaming for some $46 million, according to GiantBomb.com. If you remember, as we referenced numerous times on the show, back in October, Activision Blizzard actually announced its intentions to buy, or to get into esports, which one of the first things they did was they hired Steve Bornstein, who is a former ESPN president, and they also brought along Major League Gaming's co-founder, Mike Sepso. Now they're making it official by purchasing MLG for $46 million, with the aim of becoming the ESPN of esports. Ryan, what are your opinions of this? Esports is a pretty big deal, but is it a smart purchase?
I think it's a lot more smart than buying Candy Crush for $600 trillion or whatever it was a couple months ago. I think there's a market there for it, and I find it hard to believe Bobby Kotick and the people surrounding him would throw out this kind of cash if they didn't think they could recoup their investment on this. I think the market is there. Didn't ESPN do like a broadcast of, was it Heroes of the Storm about a year ago?
Yeah, it was the Heroes of the Dorm show that they did. But yeah, it was Heroes of the Storm from Blizzard.
And I don't know if you remember, but that, whether it was positive or negative, there was a ton of buzz the night that they did that.
Yes.
And you know what they say, any publicity you get is good publicity. The only time you worry is when people aren't talking about what you're doing. So, I mean, even though a lot of people were bad-mouthing what ESPN was doing, they were still talking about it.
Yeah.
So I think the market's there, and I think it's a smart move. And it doesn't surprise me at all that somebody like Activision Blizzard would be the first to dive in and make this happen. And I think it could be really badass if they handle it correctly, get some personalities on there. I'm thinking, like, you know, there's some huge personalities in the video game world now. I mean, there are video game celebrities at this point.
Yes.
And if you can grab a couple of those to kind of be, like, on-screen commentators when this is going on, I mean, this could turn out really badass. I'm not saying I'm going to sit and watch it for hours a day. But I would definitely check it out.
Yeah, and the evolution of e-gaming has really been something to see. Because it used to be kind of widely regarded as kind of a nerddom thing. And the production values, everything else, and we talked about this before, where we have all kinds of people that have access to things like software and even hardware that allow them to do so much more. And as a result, you're getting a lot of people who are really educated but really know how to communicate what they do know without being condescending. Because a lot of times back, if you would watch it, even say 3 years ago, you'd get completely lost. You would have no clue what was going on because there was a certain demeanor that people who knew the gaming, specifically things like Dota 2 or whatever, they knew that game inside and out, and there was a little bit of condescension in the attitude, as there is all the time. Just take a look at things like Hockey Twitter. If you don't know all the ins and outs of the thing, sometimes you can just exude an attitude, whether you intend to or not, of why are you bothering me, that you don't know any of this. And we've all experienced it in different walks of life. What we've got now, there are a lot of people who have really made the gaming accessible. I watched probably about an hour of the Dota 2 championships this year. And while I didn't fully understand what was going on, I never felt totally lost because of how they were presenting the game. And I think that's one of those aspects of esports that they really need to focus on. Because like you said, there's a lot of celebrities that they could easily put under contract and bring in to present these things. There's also a lot of access to online streaming and things like that, which actually is one of the concerns that I have listed in our show notes that was raised by Giant Bomb. Neither Major League Gaming or Activision actually has a streaming or TV deal currently in place. So that's going to be something that they're really going to have to address in the early goings. As you said, ESPN carried it, got a lot of buzz, got a lot of ratings, actually. I believe the ratings for the Heroes of the Dorm actually beat out, if I'm not mistaken, like the highest rated NHL game from the last season.
Wow.
It was something crazy. It was like a 6 or something like that. And again, wow. I didn't look it up, so I'm going based purely on memory. But it got huge ratings.
I remember that one night that's all anyone was talking about. I think it was like a Sunday night, so there wasn't a ton going on anyways, but I mean, it was the thing on the internet at the moment. Whether you were talking bad about it or whether you couldn't get enough of it, people are still all talking about it, and I'm sure that probably played into Activision's decision to pursue this.
Yeah. And one of the other things that's kind of being looked at right now is investors were not actually consulted before Activision pulled the trigger on this deal. So you're going to have a little bit of backlash there because it doesn't look good for Activision Blizzard. That's typically not something that you want to do as a publicly traded company. And the same thing goes with Major League Gaming. They feel they really got the shaft, the stockholders for them, because a lot of people lost a lot of money on that deal. And one of the major reasons is because of the majority of the purchase funds, that $46 million, will actually go off to paying off debts that the organization had incurred previous to that. So you're looking at all the investors that were involved with Major League Gaming, and they're really getting shafted. So there are aspects to love and to not love about the deal from different angles and depending on who you are. But all in all, it's a really smart buy by Activision. Because essentially they're just paying off the company's debt. And I think the biggest thing that I haven't actually seen mentioned yet is the fact that the name, Major League Gaming, that itself is kind of a big deal. Because you look at any major league, you got Major League Baseball, you got National Football League, you got the National Basketball Association, the National Hockey League, all of these things, they all have these, they become the big name. And yet they're all referred to as the Major League for their respective sport. So you got Major League Gaming. If they handle it right, we could see in a couple of years just a dominating force in the esports world.
Yeah, it really feels like Activision is getting in at the ground floor of something with the potential to be very, very big here. And I could see multiple, like, impersonators popping up here if they can manage to pull this off. But this will always be, you know, the first one to take a chance on this. And if this pans out, it just could be massive.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, to seeing what they do with it. Activision, big company. They did bury themselves with that $5.9 billion Candy Crush thing, which I think everybody will view as a massive mistake.
Yeah, that's the biggest head-scratcher of 2019.
Yeah, it really was. But, you know, if this is going on their way to maybe making up for that in the eyes of its supporters, then by all means, good for them. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in seeing what they do, whether they come up with a TV deal or whether they just go to straight-up streaming like a YouTube gaming type service. It'll be really interesting to see. Because advertisers are going to come into play as well, which they have been for years in video games, and this will give them another outlet to actually receive advertising dollars.
Yep. And it helps legitimize video games that much more, which is always a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, with that, we're going to move on to our next story, which also involves purchasing. According to GamePolitics.com, Oculus Rift has revealed its opening price point. I sent this article to you yesterday, Ryan. The Oculus VR system, the Rift, will actually cost purchasers $599 on day one, which is absolutely insane. The system itself will include the Rift headset, a sensor, the Oculus remote, various cables for whatever, charging cables, I would assume, hookups to computers, whatnot, an Xbox One controller, two games, Eve Valkyrie and Lucky's Tale, begins shipping on March 28th of this year. Chances are, apparently, they sold out very quickly on these devices, which kind of surprises me. And there will be some delays on shipping for some of the later purchasers of this. What are your thoughts on this? Because $599, that seems extremely high.
Yeah, it's just, I just don't know how they can sit there and expect this to end up in every household at the cost. It's more than a console. And, I mean, $600 for this package, You have to buy a console or a PC, so that's another $400 for a console. I mean, what does a good PC run right now? $600 minimum?
Depends.
To play games? I mean, we're over $1,000 at this point, Brian, invested in a gaming system. I can't justify it. I can't see how they expect parents to go out and shell out another $600 for a peripheral that we have no idea what the quality of the games are going to be behind it. This could go over as well as the PlayStation Move, for God's sake, and it's just another $600 thing sitting there collecting dust. It's just way too much money, and I'm not going to buy one at that cost.
Yeah, and you consider that the Oculus Rift is not the only one coming out into the market in the next year, and I think that $600 is ridiculous. And then to consider the fact that on the product page, they actually have a tool to tell you if your PC actually is powerful enough and does have the right requirements to run it. So you got to replace that. I just paid $1,300 for my laptop, for a high-end one. And, I mean, you can get a Mac for like $1,800, $1,200, or $2,000, something like that. It depends on your PC. Yeah. And you're going to require all this, and you're going to have it at $600, and the market is about to get flooded with the Oculus Rift, with the Vive, with the PlayStation VR. I don't know. And there's other ones, too. And that's the thing. There's other ones out there, too. And we just named three. And you're going to throw one out there for $600? Considering that the headset, you have to have that. The sensor, which detects your motion. The Oculus Remote, which is essentially a controller. And then an Xbox One controller on top of that. I mean, maybe it's a good deal with all the stuff you're getting. I don't know how much the games are going to run. But like you said, you're not sure if this is going to end up a PlayStation Vita thing or if the technology is even going to still be around in 3 years, because there's no definitive action. Everybody's excited about it, sure, but everybody was excited about Kinect, too.
Oh, yeah, that's a great comparison.
So I just don't know. Like, I don't know. You kind of expected it. I mean, everybody, all industry people were saying it was going to be as much as a console, if not more. So we shouldn't be surprised. But at the same time, $600, you're talking, that's two consoles at this point.
Yeah, it's you just can't do it. It's you know, I mean, you have to draw a line in the sand at some point. And I mean, if there was something that we had seen up to this point, some kind of like AAA title that like clearly knew how to use VR, and it was just like, I have to have VR just for that experience. Mm-hmm. They haven't shown us anything, and a lot of that is just the nature of VR itself, is that you can't put a guy on stage and demonstrate to the crowd what it feels like. All it is a guy walking around with a goofy thing on his head, talking about how much fun he's having, and we talked about this on the E3 preview show, that this was going to be a problem for selling VR, and in my opinion, it is. But I just don't see anything that can justify $600.
Because as much as I've always said, a VR game that was a fighting game would be so awesome. Tekken 7 VR is just not doing it for me. I mean, of all the games, Tekken makes the most sense to bring into VR first, given its history and given the nature of the game itself, because it's kind of focused on, there's special moves, but they follow more of a realism line than something like Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. But I have not seen anything that has interested me so much that I would need a system, let alone for $600. And all the people that are talking about how hyped up they are for it, how quickly does that hype just go away? Because I can't see, like you said on Twitter, actually, about how it's going to be limited by the genres that are on there. And how many genres can actually go into a VR environment and actually work? And the answer is not many.
I can think of two, and you name fighting with Tekken. The only other one that pops into my mind is a horror situation, like maybe Until Dawn would be really cool in a VR environment. But, I mean, who would want to play an Uncharted game in virtual reality or a Call of Duty? And for $600, if I'm not using it every single day and every game that I purchase at the store for $60 doesn't incorporate some kind of VR element, I'm going to look at that thing sitting on its stand and get pissed off because it's just there collecting dust.
Yeah. I mean, Doom VR might be all right if they, like, redid a Doom. Because you're walking down the hallways, turn, reach a T, turn either way, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, but, or Wolfenstein, too.
Yeah, yeah, or even maybe an RPG, if it was like a Japanese-style RPG. From a first-person perspective, that might be fun. But really, at this point, there are way too many questions about whether this tech is going to exist in 3 years to just invest this much money. And I don't know, if you look at it as a 3-year investment, $200 a year, which ends up as $12 a month, maybe that's worth it to you. And I'm not going to judge you if you do say that it's worth it to you. It's just not worth it to me.
For me, a pre-order is definitely out of the question at that price until I see an actual, you know, who knows, maybe on launch day there's a VR version of Alien Isolation 2, and it's just the greatest thing ever made, and I absolutely have to have it. I mean, that's a different story, but I cannot go in and make this a cold purchase without going to Best Buy or wherever, putting this device on my head, and seeing what it's actual like. It's just too much money to make a cold purchase without experiencing it firsthand.
Yeah. And related to this is actually the next story, and I'll just go right into it. Sony CEO Kaz Hirai actually spoke with the BBC at CES 2016, according to VGCharts.com, and he actually said that Sony is pretty much all in with the PlayStation VR. He said, quote, "We're working on over 100 titles that will play on PlayStation VR. This is a testament to the kind of support we're getting from the content creation community. So we have a lot of support, and I think it will be a great product when it comes out later this year." Now, knowing that PlayStation, Sony, has over 100 working titles at this point, does that surprise you or change your mind at all? Or do you figure that a lot of these 100 will never see the shelf?
Yeah, that's the definitely the latter. I mean, 100 titles, what is the quality going to be of 100 titles? I would be way more excited about a dozen titles being in development, because that would tell me that all the resources are going into those 12 games. But, I mean, that's spreading a lot of people really thin, trying to make that many games. And it's hard not to imagine in my head that some of these games are going to be pretty bad.
Yeah. And Sony can't work on 100 titles for the PlayStation 4. How are they going to do it for a brand new technology?
They can't. It makes a great bullet point on a PR release to have a nice round number like, oh, we're out. Well, you know, there's 100 titles in development, but like you said, 30 of those will never see the light of day, minimum.
Yeah.
It's just that does absolutely nothing for me. And, I mean, until we see a price, it's a great opportunity to come in and do what they did at the E3 where they announced the PS4 and come in and say, hey, this thing's $299.
Yep.
You know, you could go get the Oculus, but hey, look what we're going to give you. It's got a PS4 controller. It's got all the charging stuff. It's got the sensor, you know, $300. But, you know, if they can do that, that's a game changer right there.
Yeah, and that's one way to get in on it. Oculus Rift, I think, is taking advantage of the opportunity to say that, hey, we're first, and so we can charge whatever the hell we want. And,
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of technology that has to be paid for right off the bat, which is why the consoles always end up so expensive when they first come out. But,
yeah.
Like you said, I mean, of the 100-plus titles, you'll probably see 30 on the shelves. Of those 30, probably 24 will score a 4.5 on the out of 10.
Definitely. Yep.
From every reviewer out there, because it'll be stupid-ass games like Solitaire VR.
Yeah, there's some of these are just going to be god-awful.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be probably like a tennis game. You know, I'm sure there will be some kind of Like, I remember when the Move came out, there was like a Move Sports type of deal, you know, and it was okay, but it was just there to kind of play with the hype. There'll be a bunch of games that are just like that, developed specifically for VR, but they're not going to be good. Yeah. You know, there's not going to be a good story. It's just going to be something. It's kind of like when Avatar came out in the theaters. Avatar is not a good movie, but I mean, the 3D in it was, it was amazing. It was a game changer. It helped sell, you know, millions of 3D TVs into people's homes because of that film alone. Yeah. Well, this is going to, that's the same principle applies here. There's going to be stuff that looks really cool in VR, but that doesn't mean it's a good story or a good game.
Yeah, and it makes it hard for people who are interested in the product. Because not only are you going to have to be dealing with the fact that, yes, it's a new technology, and yeah, there's going to be a lot of crappy games. Maybe there will be some great games, but they'll be on completely different, incompatible systems. So you're going to end up with maybe two good games on Oculus, maybe three good games on the PlayStation VR, maybe whatever on the Vive. And what's your option going to be? You're going to pay $600 or even $300 for two decent games over a period of time and not be able to play on any of the other VR headsets? Or you're not going to be able to plug in because you buy the PlayStation 1 because you're a Sony fanboy? You're not going to be able to play the two good titles that are on Oculus? Like, what's the compatibility, the back-and-forth compatibility going to be for these systems? There's going to be none because they're going to want to have the exclusive peripheral is what's going to happen.
It just has the feeling of a hot mess at this point. And any excitement that I had, and I never had that much excitement for VR before all this stuff, before the price was announced, before the tech demos at E3. I wasn't that excited to start with, but that little excitement that I did have has just been stomped out by the console level cost and all this other stuff. I cannot get excited about VR.
Yeah, it's just too difficult. There's way too many questions and way too many potentials. Way too much potential, rather, for completely falling on the face. And you're watching these companies. Hey, the other question I have is how much of the talent from modern consoles, how many of the developmental talent is going towards the VR and taking away from the already existing consoles, the library that could be? Because, you know, Sony is making money from the PlayStation 4. I think they reached the 35.9 million or 36.5 million or something like that in units sold for this potential for this new console. Like, how many of the developers are Sony actually devoting to these 100-plus titles that's really taking away from maybe a God of War 4 or other titles that people are really wanting to have on these current consoles? Same thing goes for Xbox. You know, because the Oculus is fine, and maybe the Oculus is a smart move since they're partnered up with Microsoft. But I don't know. Sony has such a huge lead in the console thing. If they can solidify that, then it's Microsoft almost has to take risks. Sony doesn't.
And that applies to the hardware angle, too. I mean, how much of the hardware resources as far as people and money and stuff has been spent on VR? I mean, how much farther back is that going to set the PlayStation 5 development? Not that I'm ready to buy a new console.
No.
You know, I want the PlayStation 4 to last for as long as it possibly can, because I don't want to buy another console. But is that going to push back development on hardware as well with this VR stuff? I mean, you got to imagine a ton of resources have been thrown towards developing the Sony VR headset.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on because, I mean, VR is right around the corner, whether you like it or not. And it'll be interesting to see how many units move with the Oculus and then the PlayStation VR, which I believe the PlayStation VR is set to come out either second or third quarter, if I'm not mistaken, of 2016. So we're almost guaranteed to see it in action at E3, which will be in June. But we'll definitely keep an eye on it here on Game Time. But we're going to move on to the next story, which actually has a little bit to do with a little bit of innovation as well. Psychonauts 2, which wouldn't really be all that innovative by itself, but it was successfully crowdfunded, which also wouldn't be that innovative if not for it being part of the FIG crowdfunding campaign. If you've not heard of FIG, FIG is actually like Kickstarter, except the people who kick money into these different projects actually receive some of the benefit. They're considered investors, as opposed to contributors to the campaigns. Psychonauts 2, which you might be surprised is actually going to be the sequel to Psychonauts, with less than a week to go, has successfully reached its goal, and Double Fine released a video thanking everyone who has backed the campaign, according to VGCharts.com. At the time of the writing, they had raised almost $3.5 million from almost 21,000 backers. And it ends on the 12th, so in 4 days. But this is kind of a big deal. The only reason I consider it a big deal, Ryan, and included it in the notes, because other than that, it's kind of a minor story. The fact that it was crowdfunded by FIG, I think this is the biggest title so far that's even attempted to go on to FIG. Is this something that you see as a potential future replacement for Kickstarter? Will Kickstarter always exist and this will just be an alternative? I mean, because certainly the aspect of being an investor and reaping the benefits of being such is kind of attractive.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to donate money to something, FIG is definitely... to be viewed as an investor is always better than what Kickstarter has to offer. That said, I don't think Kickstarter is going anywhere. And I think this is good to, you know, just like with consoles or car manufacturers, it's good for crowdfunding to have competition online. So, I mean, I certainly think that. But, man, nobody makes headlines quite like Tim Schafer, huh?
I know. Yeah.
He's such a unique dude and might be the most interesting guy in video games. And he's always making headlines, whether, you know, it's crowdfunding or releasing new games. He's always in the spotlight, and it's a good thing.
We always have those people, and no matter what the industry is, that quietly, slowly become legends, and then at some point you realize that they are because you have to force yourself to think about it. He is one of those guys. Hideo Kojima, in a lot of ways, if he wasn't such a diva, would actually be one of those people. Because Metal Gear Solid had kind of a slow growth, and then it kind of just exploded. As did Silent Hill, and that franchise. And I mean, even just some of the big developers in our day, even Peter Molyneux, if you look at him.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, you want to talk about guys that are marched to their own beat, Peter Molyneux is definitely that guy.
And I mean, because you look at all the different things, they slowly work their way into the fabric of their universe, whether it's a directorial thing with people like Steven Spielberg or Martin Scorsese, or the, you know, in the video game world, you're in Molyneux, you're, well, just about anybody, honestly. there's so many, Kojima and such. And one of the fun things about this crowdfunding thing is that I think FIG is exactly where I would love to see games like Shenmue 3 end up, as opposed to a Kickstarter, where it's just Sony asking for a big bucket of money, despite having a bigger bucket of money just sitting beside them.
Yeah.
And kind of one of those things, if you're like a AAA title developer, and you're asking for freebies on Kickstarter, I just think it looks bad.
Yeah, it looks really bad.
Yeah, and a thing like FIG will allow these people, who we already have faith in these developers to make good games. Maybe they just need that little push, kind of fundraiser kind of thing. But in all honesty, I don't want to hand Ubisoft a butt-ton of money for another Assassin's Creed. But there might be some people that do, and why should those people not be rewarded for showing Ubisoft that, hey, you've already got my money for this entire thing. Or any developer, Square Enix, whatever. I mean, they should be rewarded. If they're willing to put their money up for a game, they should also have the ability to be rewarded beyond some ridiculous Kickstarter, here, you get a piece of DLC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because other than that, why not just pre-order the game?
It'll be interesting to see if Kickstarter is forced to kind of reevaluate how they interact with their donors because of stuff like this. I mean, it certainly would be good for everyone involved if Fig... there was a bunch more stuff to... Fig got a bunch more projects off the ground, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of force Kickstarter to rethink the way they do business.
Yeah. But it is interesting. And Fig just started this year, if you haven't... if you haven't been paying attention. They just came not as a replacement, but as really a, sorry, I'm distracted because my link didn't work. Fig came out as not a replacement, but an alternative to Kickstarter because they realized that a lot of Kickstarter campaigns weren't getting funded, mainly because the lack of incentive to do so. And a lot of projects were getting left on the floor, which was sad. And I think that I love Fig. Like I said, for AAA developers, big-time companies, I just think it's just a really great thing. I think it's great for the video game industry. I think it's great for the movie industry, if the movie industry gets involved in that as well.
Yeah, and kind of circling back to the beginning of the show here, I mean, if we can find more games like Rocket League, if this gets more like games like that produced, gets the developer over the hump to make this game and get it in the hands of the public, we win, guys. I mean, that's why it's a good thing. Don't ignore these indie titles. I mean, Brian's Game of the Year was an indie title. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of these good games out here. We all win if these games get made.
Yes, absolutely. But we're going to move on to the next show because I think that's the perfect note to end. The indie games, really, they're right there, and sometimes they just need that little bump. I don't know what else there is to say. but yeah, we're going to move on to the next story, which is about Just Cause. And pirates, actually. Just Cause 3 has prompted despair among Chinese pirates, is the headline from GamesIndustry.biz. According to GamesIndustry.biz, some Chinese pirates of games are actually really, really, really concerned about Just Cause 3 because they're having problems cracking the final stage of the game. Avalanche Studios' open world sequel uses anti-tamper technologies from the Austrian company Denuvo Software Solutions, which, if you recall that company, you probably played Dragon Age Inquisition. The difference between Just Cause 3 and Dragon Age is that the Chinese pirates group 3DM was actually able to crack that after a month. But, according to one hacker who has the funniest name, their name is actually, what is it, Bird Sister, is what they go by. They express concerns about the hacking community actually being able to keep up with the company's efforts to derail them. And he said, quote, "I still believe that this game, as in Just Cause 3, can be compromised. But according to current trends in the development of encryption technology, in 2 years' time, I'm afraid there will be no free games to play in the world." Are you feeling sympathy for the pirates, or do you just kind of want to say, screw you, you're stealing?
Yeah, I have no sympathy for them. I mean, if we don't all chip in and buy these games legitimately, no more new games are going to get made, guys. I mean, that's what it boils down to. The developer has to make some money. You just got to bite the bullet and spend the $60 if you want them. If you want Just Cause 4, 5, 6, 7, you know. They got to get paid too, you know.
Yeah. And one of the things, and I do find there to be like a huge difference between the movie industry and like the music industry and, of course, the gaming industry when it comes to piracy, because the music industry gets paid every time it's played on the radio. They're getting paid every time it's downloaded in iTunes. They're getting paid when their songs are used in movies. And so I see a difference, I believe. I don't like to see movies pirated. I'm not a real fan of that. Video games, I don't like to see pirated either. Like, I understand. I'm not going to go all holy roller on you and tell you that I've never illegally downloaded music because I am a Napster child. But there is that aspect of it that, like you said, you've got to have a certain percentage of the people chipping in and buying these titles or else the companies go under. And I kind of applaud Just Cause 3 and Avalanche Studios for going out and finding a company like Denuvo and really using them to protect their game. Why shouldn't they? I just don't understand how, like a Chinese hacking company, sure, they're going to say, well, they're a hacker group. They're not really a company. Having a problem with it is kind of funny because it's almost like there's a denial of what they're doing being wrong, which just baffles my mind. So many aspects of that just confuse me, and that's one of them. It's like, what, they have a right to all this data and information because they have the ability to do so? Kind of a moral disconnect to me, which we see a lot in our society.
Definitely a sense of entitlement with the person being quoted in this article.
Yeah. It's really weird. And in hackers, to me, I don't like hackers. I'll just say that. And maybe my website pays for it. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they do. Tough crap. I don't like hackers because the hackers are really stealing information. And for what cause? For their own personal needs or whims or just because they want to be petty. And I just don't like that. That's why I don't like Anonymous, which I openly say, because Anonymous does some good things, sure. But they also do some pretty shitty things. And if you're willing to put up with the shitty things because of the good things, then what moral ground do you have to stand on? I just don't see it. And with hackers, you're stealing. It's glorified stealing. And you're going to complain that the company made it harder for you to steal? It's like you're a 12-year-old trying to have an argument with a bunch of adults in the room. It just doesn't make sense, and it annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, it definitely seems, going back to the article, though, I mean, it definitely seems like this is going to, you know, things are going to trend this way. You know, I mean, if Just Cause 3 has found a way to kind of put a stop to this, or at the very least delay the ability to hack the game so you don't get to play it for 6, 7, 8 months till they figure out how to break it down, I mean, other games are going to follow suit, and it's just going to get more and more difficult. I'm sure they'll crack it at some point if they keep chipping away at it.
Yeah.
But at what point, you know, if you want to play the game now, just go buy
it. Yeah. And you look at it, Denuvo explained in the article, they actually explained to Eurogamer, which is also a source that we use often here on ToonShow.com, but they told them back in 2014, quote, keep in mind that most PC games are cracked and pirated on the day of release, if not earlier, so keeping titles 100% piracy-free for weeks or even months is almost unprecedented. And in reality, that's how a lot of news stories break about what content is going to be in video games. A lot of the characters for Street Fighter V were actually released ahead of time because hackers got in and looked at all the coding. That's how we found out about players like Ken and Ryu, which that only made sense that they'd be in or whatever. But people were hacking that. They were looking at the music. They were looking at the music for Super Smash Brothers to see what characters would be coming up. They knew about Street Fighter characters being in Super Smash Brothers before Nintendo even thought about announcing it. And they didn't get it from sources inside of Nintendo. They got it by hacking.
Takes so much of the fun and excitement and anticipation out of it, too.
Yeah, because these companies, they have marketing plans for releasing this information. There's that amount of anticipation that you know there's an announcement coming, and so you wait for it, and then somebody spoils it. It takes the fun out of it. Whether you're going to buy that game or not, you still find yourself interested. I don't own a Wii U. I will never own a Super Smash Brothers game, most likely.
Yeah.
But still, it's fun to hear what characters they're going to have.
Oh, definitely.
So, but either way, that's been the news for the afternoon, and there was a lot more to go over, because it's been 2 weeks since we spoke with you, including the PlayStation blackouts with their service, which...
Again, deja vu. Wasn't that about this time last year we went through the same thing?
Yeah, it was last year Christmas when Lizard Squad took down both Xbox and PlayStation, and it was down for 5 days for the PlayStation.
It was so frustrating.
This time they're not saying anything about what it was. At least I've not seen anything about what it was so far.
I haven't heard anything either.
But Lizard Squad and one of their hacking group actually said that they were going to do it ahead of the Christmas holiday. But it makes you wonder, why hasn't Sony gotten their shit together when it comes to hacking?
Yeah, it's so bad, especially when you consider how great the competition in Xbox Live, how great their system is and their hierarchy is. And yeah, they got hacked last year too, but they fixed it in what, like a couple of days?
Yeah.
It's just, you gotta get your act together, Sony. Come on.
Yeah, because it's really bad. It looks bad every time it happens, and it happens way too often. And part of the evidence that it happens way too often, literally, in my Twitter search engine, I have as one of my saved searches, PSN down.
Me too.
So anytime I have a problem, I pull out my phone, I open up Twitter, I hit the search button, and then click right on PSN down just to see if there's a problem.
Crazy.
That should not be the case. It should be an extenuating circumstance, not an everyday thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I would expect to have in the first year of a new online hierarchy. PSN's been out since, what, 2007?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking 9 years. It's just unacceptable in 9 years that this is an annual PSN outage, and if not more. But it's so frustrating, especially around the holidays when people are getting new consoles, new games. So many of these games are online only. Star Wars Battlefront. Mm-hmm. I mean, how huge is that game right now because of the new movie being out? It's an online only game. Are you just going to play the speeder bike tutorial over and over again if you can't get on the PSN? I mean, it's ridiculous. And that goes hand in hand with the risk of making an online only game, which is why I will continue to be a proponent of put an 8-hour single player campaign in your game no matter what.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a really good point, because my son, who is a huge Battlefront fan, he spends so many hours on that game. And not only that, but also Plants vs. Zombies. Neither one of those he could play the other day because PSN was down. And it was somehow my fault.
Yeah, of course. That's the way it always works. Fix it, Dad.
I was like, oh, great. Awesome. Because somehow I had signed out of the EA thing. And I'm like, okay, EA servers, my bad. But either way, that is what it is. What we're going to do now... We're going to play a little musical bumper and then move on to 2015's top stories right here on TuneShow.com and the Trending Topics Network. And when that happens, you can guarantee I just needed a drink. So anytime I play music like that, it's because I needed a drink. That's a good strategy, I think. That's podcasting 101 right there. So, Ryan, it was a busy year, 2015, when it comes to the news. And I just recorded or put in the show notes a bunch of the top stories from the year, which ended up being a lot.
It's crazy this year.
Yeah. So what we'll do, I'm going to go right down through in semi-chronological order because I just went month by month and everything else was kind of not necessarily in a specific chronological order. So we're going to start in February. Ryan, I don't know how much of a fan you were of joystick.com, but I was heartbroken when AOL decided to shut the doors down on joystick.com. For years, that's where I'd gotten my video game news. In most cases, that was the first place I went. And AOL decided to shut the doors, to basically just stop. And at the time, it was kind of odd because they had done something brave at joystick.com, and that right before they shut it down, they decided that they were no longer going to rate at using a number system video games in their reviews, which was kind of a brave thing to do in this world where really every company out there uses some sort of a number system to rate their games.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I love that. I get so tired of people. I know one of the biggest gripes that you hear from video game reviewers is that, oh, people just scroll to the bottom and look at the score, whether it's a letter grade or a number grade. And I think that's true in a lot of cases. People just don't want to sit and read the article.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't offer up a score to kind of justify where it stands, how good of a game it is to describe the experience and force people to actually read the review, I mean, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I kind of wish they would treat it like it was a Transformer action figure, where they would have just individual scores for each individual aspect of the game and then leave, like, an overall number, like, out of there. Because I think that, and we've had this discussion in the past on this show, we hold different things, different aspects of games to different standards depending on the general overall experience of the game. And like my review of Rocket League, overall it was my favorite game of 2015, even though overall the different aspects of the game weren't necessarily the best aspects of all games. It was just a great combination of everything. Because you could say that the graphics were kind of sucky, because they were kind of basic for this generation of games. So they weren't anything, I wouldn't say sucky, but they were kind of average for this generation of console. So I kind of wish that they would do that, to where they'd put a combination of the different things and then just have like a fun rating. How much fun? I mean, that's one of the things I like about Game Informer magazine, is if you read their reviews, yeah, they put the number, but directly under that number they have each different aspect, whether it's the graphics, the sound, and one of the first ones I look at, I don't look at anything else until after I've looked at replayability.
Yep.
And to me, that's the biggest one, is can I play this more than once and like it?
Yeah. Yeah, the Transformers reference is great. I mean, it's there's so many different, you have to break it down into its independent components, because clearly games like Fallout 4, we both agree that the graphics in that aren't, they're not good. Yeah. They're just kind of mediocre. They're good. I mean, I love Fallout 4, don't you?
Yeah, I love it.
It's a great game. I mean, you can't weigh you can't put so much stock into how pretty a game is,
mm-hmm.
And conversely, you can't put so much stock into how great a story is. It all has to come together, and I think that's where the fun, you know, how much fun do I have with the game? How many hours am I going to get into this? I mean, I'm already 25 hours deep in a Fallout 4, so I mean, I'm having a lot of fun with that, but I mean, it's not a pretty game, the story's okay, but it's just what comes together at the end of the day is, do I enjoy playing this game?
Yes.
And the same goes for Rocket League, too. I mean, it just, it has to come together. It's all about the experience.
Yeah. Completely, and that's why one of the first things I said about Fallout 4 was there are plenty of reasons to love this game, there are plenty of reasons to hate it.
Yeah.
Because I really do believe that. There are faults that are glaring faults, like this story isn't all that original. Like, Bethesda really did play it safe in a lot of instances with Fallout 4. But as I said towards the end of my review, it's what I expect. It gives me what I expect from the Fallout franchise, which is I want to go and I want to knock somebody's head off or have them explode when I shoot them with a 10mm pistol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just all there is to it. That's why I play Fallout, and it gave me what I wanted.
And I get the distinct impression that Bethesda knew that that's what people were going to expect, and like you said, they played it safe. They gave people more Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
And you know, it's fine. It's a gamble that paid off. I think the sales have been great. The reviews have been good. I don't think it's going to win any Game of the Year awards by any means.
No.
But, I mean, it's fun, and they're making money, so everybody's happy.
Yeah. And you look at – and when I look at Fallout 4, I kind of tell myself that if Fallout New Vegas was released 2 years ago or even 3 years ago – or 2 years ago. We'll just say 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I would have absolutely hated Fallout 4. Because I don't think that it advanced a whole lot. But there's that aspect of absence makes the heart grow fonder. And that's kind of what it is. It's been a long time. And yes, I've played Fallout New Vegas on numerous occasions since it was released. Even right before I got Fallout 4. But Fallout 4 is a little bit differentiated from that and gives me enough to keep playing it. It's got enough. But again, like I said, I do feel that they played it way too safe with it. They could have really advanced a lot of different things, but just looking at the different... I think there's... I don't want to get too much into it because it becomes our Fallout thing. But yeah. When you face a Miralik, or a Miralik, whatever, that crab-looking thing, you've got the basic version, and then you go, like, 5-6 different versions of that thing, and the biggest version is going to kill you quick if you're not ready for it. And that's an aspect that I absolutely love, because once you've reached level 20, or 22 in Fallout New Vegas, there's not really a whole lot of challenge. Pretty much everybody you're going to be able to, unless you're completely outnumbered. Whereas in Fallout 4 so far, I think I just turned to level 32, and I'm still getting my ass kicked by some of these creatures. So, I mean, that's interesting. But either way, Joystick did make the brave decision right before they shut down to get rid of the numbers in their rating systems, and I believe they cited exactly what you said, which is people just go straight to the number and don't actually read what you have to say about the game, and then they dump all over the score, despite the fact that what their protests are actually addressed in the articles. So I didn't blame them for that. I actually liked it. I think I said so in Game Time. But yeah, February, AOL shut them down. Moving on to March, because there were two really big things that happened in March that I was able to pull. First off, EA shut down Maxis, which was the studio that created SimCity and Spore. Spore was a really big game on the PS2, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it played. I actually watched a lot of the videos because it fascinated me, like the whole idea of it. SimCity, I've always been a fan of SimCity, so them closing the door on Maxis was kind of a big deal. Maybe not to most people, but to me. And then Nintendo announced its partnership with DNA, which I believe is how they actually pronounce it, which is a mobile gaming developer. And they also announced the upcoming Nintendo NX. So a pretty big month in March, especially for Nintendo there. What were your thoughts, and continuing thoughts on Nintendo NX?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's so hard to predict what's going on. I think that's one of the biggest stories of 2016 is where Nintendo is going to go with their console, because obviously the Wii U has been, is it safe to call the Wii U a failure at this point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it from a sales standpoint, it wasn't good. Certainly third-party developers seem to have no interest in it. And I think it's so important that Nintendo pulls the Activisions and those type of developers back in and gets them back on. I mean, people forget, but Activision was huge back in the Nintendo Entertainment System. I mean, Nintendo used to have third-party developers everywhere.
Yeah, they really
did. They need to get back to that. They need to get something that, in my opinion, it doesn't just have to be on par with the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. I think it has to be more powerful.
Yes.
From a graphic standpoint. And really lure people in, because now we're 3 years into Sony and Microsoft's new console. Nintendo has to show 3 years worth of, at least two, three years worth of, you know, technological improvements on top of that if their console is coming out, I would assume, this fall, if they do an announcement at E3 and then release it this fall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Nintendo's really got to wow and win some people back after the Wii U debacle.
Yeah, and if they are able to release this NX, whatever it is, and it's going to be, a success, either way, if they release it before Christmas of 2016, you're going to see a huge buffer of cash going to Nintendo. But if it doesn't succeed, they're going to spend that money before it's even in the door, because they're going to end up finding themselves in some serious trouble, which is sad, because I mean, for most gamers, Nintendo, NES, Super NES, those are our roots.
That's where it all began.
Yeah, that's where it came from. And even going back so far as to say, well, Donkey Kong was a Nintendo game on the Atari. Just such a big deal. And one of the stories that I didn't put into this actual list was the fact that Nintendo actually dropped out of Japan's top 100 companies list this year, just showing exactly where Nintendo's at, which is in dire straits at this point, when considering since its inception, it's the first time that Nintendo has ever fallen off the top 100 list. A lot riding on that NX system.
Yeah.
But we're going to move on to April now. We'll start with the one of the things that we'll develop into later stories throughout the year. It'll be kind of a reoccurring thing, and that's Konami making the first big splash that it would make this year by delisting itself from the New York Stock Exchange after canceling Silent Hills. That was the first real indicator that something was going on at Konami. Was them pulling themselves from the New York Stock Exchange, which, first off, no matter what the company is, if you do that, that's not a good sign.
No. What a rocky year for Konami. Huh?
Yeah, and the chinks of the armor were there, especially Silent Hills with Guillermo del Toro was directing that. You had, Norman Reedus was actually involved in that project. Of course, Hideo Kojima being the director of Silent Hills, which at that point was PT, far as everybody knew. It was just really the start of something really big for Konami and Kojima, which we're going to touch on a lot over this year, because really that was the, if you had to sum up 2016, it was the absolute biggest story. Because of the longevity and all the weird twists and turns, Kojima, Konami, and their relationship really just dwarfed almost everything else.
And I was lucky enough to play the PT demo. I've still got it on my PS4. It's nice. If you can get your hands on it, it's definitely worth checking out. But I was so crushed when that got canceled, because the concept behind that demo is just so unlike anything you've ever seen before in a video game. And it had so much potential. And I just remember the day that it got canceled and just being like, you've got to be kidding me. You guys are sitting on a gold mine, and it's not going to happen now. It was just crushing.
Well, maybe Sony will actually bring it to light. And I hope they actually called it PT just to be spiteful.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if they can do something with that, I honestly don't think it has to have the Silent Hill brand to work. I mean, do something with that. The foundation has been built. People love it. I've never heard a bad thing said about the PT demo.
Yeah.
So make that thing happen.
Absolutely. I agree with you, because, I mean, with all the hype that thing got, and maybe you can't call it Silent Hill, maybe because Konami still owns it. I'm not 100% sure. But if they don't do something, because obviously Guillermo del Toro and Hideo Kojima had a great relationship, del Toro is actually going to be presenting a Hall of Fame award to Kojima in the next month, I believe, in a couple of weeks. So they still have a great relationship with each other. They get each other. And that's a perfect time. Actually, with his knowledge and with this new deal with Sony that we actually haven't discussed either, to do something together, to bring maybe PT, maybe something like it, back to life, bring it back from the dead, without regard to legal ramifications and whatnot.
Yeah.
So as an outsider, we want it. So just make it happen and deal with all the legal stuff. That's why you hire lawyers. also in April, one of the smaller bits of news, but still kind of big, is Take-Two Interactive shut down the first of two major studios that it would shut down this year in 2K Australia. They actually made Borderlands the pre-sequel. Also, Borderlands creative Matthew Armstrong left Gearbox, which was kind of a big deal. Without Borderlands, where is Gearbox today?
Alien Colonial Marines 2.
Yeah.
don't get me wrong. That was a joke. No, do not make another one of those games. Yeah. We don't. But.
I love Borderlands. I still play it on the Xbox 360. I haven't played Borderlands 2. I don't know why. But that's such a good game. And in Gearbox, I mean, they struck a gold mine with it, but they've made so many of them. And the only one that I haven't been able to really, like, I played it a little bit and I couldn't stand it was the Telltale one.
I've heard that's not pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not about that. Tales from the Borderlands. It's funny. I can't stand Telltale's version of games. And I wish that's what we could say in 2015, that the top story was actually Telltale abandoned that game method. But they won't. but we're going to move on to June. June was actually kind of a big deal. Obviously, E3 taking place June 16th to 18th. And we got a lot of great announcements. But before that could happen, Club Nintendo was actually discontinued in North America, kind of marking the beginning of the end of an era for Nintendo. Club Nintendo, if you'll recall, is actually like a subscription service to where you sign up and get access to different like retro games and stuff like that and get information from Nintendo. But they discontinued that in North America. Arc System Works actually purchased the rights to develop Double Dragon, Super Dodgeball, and River City Ransom, which you can actually find in the PlayStation Store now, each of those, in the arcade series. And then Square Enix actually opened a new studio called the Tokyo RPG Factory, which, let's face it, that is a Square Enix kind of thing, is the RPG.
Well, definitely.
Pretty much defines that company in most cases. I really hope they bring back Parasite Eve. That's the one game that I would love to see them remake. They keep remaking these Final Fantasy games and remastering those. I just want Parasite Eve to come out with a new game.
You're not the only one. That's a popular one.
Yeah, it was such a good game, and I'd love to see it in movie form as well. Who knows? Maybe. Maybe one day. Also, speaking of E3, just looking back at it, what do you think, months afterwards, the biggest thing to actually come out of E3 was? That actually came to fruition.
Backwards compatibility for Microsoft. I think that was just so massive, and I cannot believe we are, 7 months later, Sony has not shot back and added it to the PlayStation 4. I mean, it's just huge to be able to open up that Xbox 360 catalog to people that just own an Xbox One. It's a massive, move for Microsoft to make, and I think it won them E3.
It really was, and the biggest thing for me, along with that, was actually the amount of secrecy that went into Bethesda Studios and their announcement of the Fallout 4 game coming. Because when you look at the quick turnover, everybody knew they were working on a Fallout 4. I don't think anybody really expected for the announcement of Fallout 4 to come and the release to come out almost really immediately in terms of, in relative terms of when announcements are made about a game and when they actually come out. The turnover from E3 to the actual release on November 17th of Fallout 4 was just so condensed that I think that it really opened up this big hype train that fed into the game. Because you're looking at literally just, what, 3, 4 months? 5 months?
Yeah, I thought for sure it was going to be coming 2017 at the earliest. And, it was just a couple of months, and the game turned out great. And, it might not be as diverse or unique as some people wanted it to be. But, I mean, you got to respect the fact that they announced it and gave us the game in the same year. That's very impressive.
Yeah, and that nobody knew about it. I mean, in this age of everything being leaked, Bethesda Studios were able to keep it within their circle and actually keep that news under wraps until they were ready to tell everybody that it was happening. There's something to be said for that. I mean, yeah, like we said, everybody knew that they were going to be developing Fallout, that they were probably already working on it. But the fact that they were able to keep the fact that it would come out in 2015 under wraps for so long in this day and age was actually a pretty big deal. And I hope that a lot of developers actually see this and how it worked with Bethesda and kind of do their own thing that way. Because once you introduce and work in collaboration with Xbox and Sony and all that stuff, the capabilities of leaking information just rise exponentially every time. And I kind of hope the companies keep more of a wrap on it because I love being surprised. And that was the best element for me, was the fact that Bethesda Studios was able to surprise me. Unlike a lot of other things. I mean, Sony's version of surprising people with The Last Guardian was the surprise that we've seen for 22 straight years at E3 at this point.
I'm so sick of that game.
No. And they've taken everything that it was great about The Last Guardian, and they've just milked it for so long that it's almost like, I don't know, you've been friend-zoned by it, is kind of how I feel.
I mean, Star Wars The Force Awakens just came out here about a month ago, and part of the fun of that movie, and we've discussed this a couple of times now, was not knowing, and the excitement and the anticipation. We never get to feel that in video games anymore. We always open our Christmas presents, or we know what's in the Christmas present a month before we have to open it.
Yes.
And it's just, it takes so much of the magic and the fun out of it. And, you know, like you referenced a couple minutes ago here, Brian, we got some of that with how Bethesda handled Fallout 4, but I don't know why we can't get that from the major console makers, Sony and Microsoft, anymore. Although Microsoft did pull it off with the backwards compatibility because nobody saw that coming. And that's part of the reason that announcement is so memorable, is because nobody expected it. Yeah. We thought there was no chance that was ever going to happen. Sony, give us something like that. You know, make us feel excited and a sense of wonder again.
Yeah, and like you said, months later, we essentially get from PlayStation that they're going to port over some PlayStation 2 titles, and that's as close as they're coming to it.
Yawn.
Which is fine. I mean, there's some... I mean, PlayStation 2 was the most successful console in the history of video game consoles, so I'm sure that part of the reason for that is the game library. Yeah. But when that's all that they get after saying, well, backwards compatibility is nice, it must have taken a lot of resources, I believe is what they said whenever Microsoft announced it. They really downplayed it like it wasn't a big deal. But like you said, it could easily argued that was one of the biggest things to come out of E3.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to July, because July was actually a very busy and impactful month. I'll start at the bottom of my list, which is Windows 10 was released. In terms of gaming, this could be a big deal, it could be a bad deal, I don't know. But one of the good things about Windows 10 is going to be its intercompatibility with Xbox. And that's one of the major selling points for Windows 10. And PC gamers as well, they kind of like the idea of having all that. Also, Razer Incorporated actually purchased all software rights to the Android-based Ouya, which was a big deal, because I remember when Ouya was coming out, it was actually considered to be, I think it's called a micro console. And it was supposed to be the next evolution in video gaming, because it would take your mobile games and actually make them presentable on, like, a television.
That's a great concept.
Yeah. That's what I understand. But it was kind of shocking when it happened, because despite the potential especially given the mobile gaming market, and how big it is, I believe $1.1 billion was spent over the Christmas season on mobile purchases of games.
That's huge.
Massive. I was shocked that the Ouya really didn't take off. But who knows? That could have something to do with a lot of the other issues that Android has. in things like the availability of timely updates to all the different cell phones and things like that, Android devices.
Yeah.
Also, EA announces EA Motive Studio, which they were opening, and is going to be led by former Ubisoft director Jade Raymond, which we actually talked about this, I believe, when it happened.
Mm.
Jade Raymond was a big acquisition for EA.
Yeah, huge.
And they give her her own studio, Motive Studios. Since then, there's actually another story later in the this little segment about Motive Studios, but we'll just move on to the huge news, which was Nintendo president and CEO Satoru Iwata passed away in July.
Mm.
Is it possible to overstate the importance of Iwata to Nintendo?
No. I mean, his presence is on par with Steve Jobs and Apple. He's such a... I mean, I don't know if anybody understands video games and marketing quite like he did. And I honestly think Nintendo is still reeling from that loss. I mean, they've still got Miyamoto on the development side. But, I mean, Iwata was such a salesman and knew how... He had so much charisma. And it's just such a huge loss for Nintendo and the video game industry in general. I mean, he's one of those guys that's just irreplaceable.
Yeah, he really was. I mean, if not for Satoru Iwata, you wouldn't have Nintendo Direct. You wouldn't have the majority of the interaction that Nintendo actually presents to its gamers, to its gaming community, because he realized that without that gaming community, there was no Nintendo. And so he constantly kept in touch and addressed his customer base, I'm going to refer to us as, because
yeah.
In the end, we're customers, but he addressed all of the gamers that he addressed as peers, as opposed to being somebody that he would talk down to because I'm the head of this big company that holds your gateway to our fantasy world. He really had that connection, and people who didn't know him appreciated him for what he was and how he treated them. And it's something that in this day and age is completely unmatched. If you know his story, he started out as a lowly developer and rose to the ranks really quickly before being named president of Nintendo. You'll never see that kind of meteoric rise either.
No.
Just such a huge loss. And like you said, Nintendo is still feeling it. It's really evident. Nintendo NX, I think, is going to be largely attributed to Iwata, even though I'm not sure how much of a hand he actually had in that project. I think historically it'll be looked at as his last legacy item.
It would have been a lot of fun to watch him on stage at E3, you know, play a part in the announcement of this new console, and to watch him do his thing and sell it, and, you know, just such on-screen or on-stage presence. And I don't know what they're going to do now. I'm sure it's Nintendo. They'll find somebody that can get the job done, and they'll still do a good job of selling their product. But it'll just never be the same, and it makes me sad, you know?
Yeah. It really does. But hopefully, Nintendo moves on without him, keeping his actual legacy in mind, which is, at the heart, everybody should be gamers. in the company, at least.
Yeah.
I think that was a key thing. He himself was a gamer, and felt free to admit it. And, you know, that just creates a connection that Nintendo absolutely needs to survive the upcoming years. August slowed down. The only thing that really happened, Gamescom 2015 in Germany, which was really kind of a dud, PAX Prime in Seattle. Couldn't tell you anything about PAX Prime. Don't know what happened.
Me neither.
Unmemorable. In September, it took a little over a month and a half, but Nintendo actually appointed Iwata's successor in Tatsumi Kimishima to take over everything there. He actually held, I believe, his first Nintendo Direct this past month. Sony renamed Project Morpheus to the PlayStation VR, which we talked about earlier. And as I said, EA reassigned the new Maxa studio. So the studio was open for just a couple months, and they were reassigned to the mobile division. Do you view that as a big deal? Is it just a sign of the times?
I certainly, yeah. I mean, mobile gaming isn't going away, and I'm not surprised at all that that EA would dedicate one studio specifically for that. I didn't think it would be the studio, the newly created studio, but, you know, yeah, it's just that's the trend that things are going, and it's not going to stop. It's just the first domino that's falling.
Yeah. Well, after that, Club Nintendo canceled in Europe and Japan, so Club Nintendo is now officially dead worldwide. Just a memory. And then also Twisted Pixel Games, which you know from Splosion Man and Gunstringer for the Kinect, left Microsoft Studios. They were purchased a few years back by Microsoft Studios. Contract up, they left, returned to their independence, which was kind of a big deal. And it's happened again since, I believe. I can't remember what company it is that left Sony recently. But there's a benefit. I think companies are starting to realize, these developers are starting to realize at least, that there's definitely a benefit to being independent. And we're seeing moves like this, which is really kind of interesting. I think it shows that gamers have really developed an appreciation for the independent developers, and I think that's a good thing. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think now that we've gone away from the, you know, we've heard so many horror stories about developing for the cell on the PS3, and I think now that we've got two consoles, the two main consoles are very similar in architecture, and I think it's so much easier for developers to make games for both consoles now. And honestly, I've got plenty of friends on the Xbox side. I want to see them enjoy the same games.
Yes.
You know, we don't need to. I get no benefit from having exclusive access to Uncharted or God of War and that stuff. The more people that can enjoy these games, the better.
Yeah. And I said that from the beginning of the exclusivity, is the fact that it doesn't benefit gamers in any way. It only benefits the companies. And I kind of look at it, if it doesn't benefit gamers, then does it benefit the industry? And I firmly believe that the answer to that question is no.
Mm-hmm.
So without gamers, you have no industry. And
yeah, I mean, it's never going to be across the board. I mean, we're never going to see an Uncharted game on Xbox. We're never going to see a Halo game on Sony. I mean, there's going to be some of those that remain. But, I mean, some of these secondary titles, yeah, everybody should have a crack at playing them.
Yeah. One of the things that was interesting when it comes to relationship between consoles, in October, and this to me is the third biggest news story of the year and one that everybody always forgets about, Microsoft actually went out and purchased Havoc from Intel. This was actually just such a huge story, and like I said, pretty much everybody is just not even mentioning it in their end-of-year reviews. Havoc, as you know, is a gaming engine that has relationships to Activision, Electronic Arts, Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony, Bethesda, Ubisoft. They've been on nearly every console since the PlayStation 2. And with that technology, I mean, you're talking over 150 game titles have used it and will continue to use it. And nobody talks about Microsoft buying this company, which is really bizarre to me.
Yeah, I mean, so many times when you put your favorite game in and are seeing the credits launch, you see that Havoc logo way more often than you don't. I mean, it's used a lot.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, like you said, it's a huge story that I think is being grossly overlooked.
And one of the funny aspects of it is the fact that there was some concern right off the bat. There was that huge panic, like, all of a sudden Microsoft was going to tell Sony, hey, you're not allowed to use this for any of your games. But the reality is, Microsoft gets to play a different card that nobody actually pays attention to, and that's like, oh, hey, Sony, by the way, you're paying us to use this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for literally virtually no investment, they just buy this technology And like we said, I mean, the Half-Life 2, Halo 2 used it. The Elder Scrolls has used it in some of their games. Fallout 3 used it. Fallout 4 used it. A lot of the mobile game companies use it. I know Mortal Kombat X Mobile actually uses Havoc, I think Havoc. I could be wrong. It might be just Unreal. But I know that Mortal Kombat X, I've seen that logo in there.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and suddenly, I mean, even Nintendo, Super Smash Bros. Brawl uses it. So it's not like they're not going to be receiving any kind of payments for using their technology. It's actually quite the opposite. So yeah, it was a really smart move by Microsoft.
Yeah, it's a very savvy move because it works on not just a financial standpoint, but also as a PR standpoint, you know, too. It's got to put a big grin on Microsoft execs' faces to know that Sony has to pay to have access to this. And, yeah, I mean, that's great PR.
Yeah, it really is. That's why, like, literally after the Hideo Kojima stuff and after the Iwata dying, I think that's one of the biggest stories of the year, and yeah, again, grossly overlooked by almost everybody. November was kind of a crazy month. As we were talking about Konami and Hideo Kojima, they shut down their LA division, which just happened to include Kojima Productions. In November, Take-Two Interactive shut down 2K China, which was also a pretty big deal. And then the bizarre news, as you called it earlier, the headshaker news of the year, Activision Blizzard purchasing Candy Crush Saga maker King Digital for a mere $5.9 billion, which is 1.5 times the amount that Disney paid for Star Wars, and also 1.5 times the amount that Disney paid for Marvel Cinematic Universe rights, by the way. Such a big investment, and I understand there are tax issues there that maybe we'll never quite understand, offshore accounts and fun stuff like that, but $5.9 billion is just flat-out ridiculous for a mobile game that seriously saw its heyday 2 years ago.
Yeah, we've had a couple of months to process this, and it makes less sense to me today than it did the day it was announced back in November, and I just don't understand what the logic is. And you mentioned it a couple of seconds ago, Brian. It's got to be some kind of tax write-off. There's got to be some kind of law. They can't possibly expect to make that money back, can they?
No. There is absolutely no way. No amount of microtransactions will ever make that $5.9 billion up. And
I mean, it's just
baffling to me. I mean, Star Wars universe and all the properties of Star Wars was worth $4 billion, and Candy Crush was worth $5.9? No.
And I mean, has King Digital ever... I mean, have they produced anything else? I'm not that familiar with them as a developer, but I mean, obviously that's the title that they're known for.
Soda Crush.
Oh, there you go.
And that was it. Just ridiculous. But,
yeah.
I mean, maybe they know something that we don't. And
could be.
Who knows? We'll find out.
It's not like Activision has a track record for success. So, I mean, it's hard to question them when they do stuff like this. But, I mean, come on. For that amount of money.
Yeah. It just seems completely outlandish to us. And we assume that we have common sense. But also Activision, that wasn't the only thing they did in November. They also opened their own TV and film studio called Activision Blizzard Studios, so it'll be kind of interesting to see what they do with that as well.
I wonder if that'll play into the acquisition of Major League Gaming.
That might very well have something to do with it, which would be kind of making sense. So who knows? We'll keep an eye on that. I'm sure we'll hear something in the upcoming months as it pertains to those two purchases as well. December started off kind of fun because you had the Game Awards, which featured The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt as its Game of the Year. From everything that I've heard, well-deserved. I know Mart is playing it right now, says that he absolutely loves it. Have you heard anything negative necessarily about The Witcher 3?
when it first came out, I heard the performance upon launch wasn't that great. There was a lot of screen stutter, a lot of popping and stuff. But, I mean, I think they've since fixed that, and that's fairly common in this day and age with day one patches. I mean, you kind of have to expect that games are going to be released in a state where they're going to have some improvements made via patches.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to hold that against The Witcher because that's not exclusive to that game. But, yeah, I mean, I'm hearing so much positive with it that I'm going to have to pick it up. I missed it the first time around. People are just raving about it. And despite being a huge Phantom Pain fan, and that's my personal game of the year, I think Witcher's going to win most of the major awards for that.
Yes, absolutely. And I need to pick it up as well, which I will likely do once I'm back to work. but also, probably the biggest story outside of the Game of the Year honors at the Game Awards was actually Hideo Kojima being legally restricted by Konami from attending the award show. Really, this is probably the ugliest it's gotten in that whole drama between Konami and Kojima. When this happened, it was kind of shocking. It was ugly. We actually covered it on one of the previous episodes of Game Time, you and I, as just being probably the biggest black mark in this whole thing. It really made it have the feel of just an ugly divorce that was nearing completion.
Yeah, it's just embarrassing for all parties involved. It's embarrassing for Mr. Kojima. It's embarrassing, certainly embarrassing for Konami. And, I mean, the speech that the host gave at the whole thing, and he handled it as well as I can imagine anyone could handle that, given that the guy who won the award wasn't there,
yeah.
Was legally prohibited from being there to accept it. And I have absolutely no problem with him throwing Konami under the bus in front of a televised audience there.
Yeah.
because frankly, they deserve it.
Yeah. And when Jeff Keighley made that announcement, you could hear the crowd, and they were just totally all about the fact that he was willing to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was very refreshing. A lot of people would have just swept it under the rug and said, we're not going to address this. But props to him for just taking it head on, and Konami got what they deserved, in my opinion.
Yeah, and really just such a black mark in that whole thing, and really kind of indicative to the way that whole thing went down, which is all the mudslinging, the removal of Kojima's name from the box art of Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain. Just incredible.
It's sad after 27 years of making Metal Gear games that this is how, you know, this was his swan song. This was Kojima's coda to go out and say, this is it. I'm done with Metal Gear. The game ends in a way that it goes full circle. I mean, to see him go out in this matter is just very sad and insulting, in my opinion.
Yeah. I kind of want his game for Sony that he's now contractually obligated to make. I kind of want it to be a dumping grounds for Kojima, like have an evil game developing company or something like that.
Well, that'd be great.
I mean, it'd be so funny. But anyway, I like twisted things like that, so who knows?
It'll be interesting to see if Konami is still a thing by the time that game gets released, because it's got to have a 3-4 year development cycle. And the way Konami is going, I'm not sure. What does Konami have left? You know,
yeah.
They burn that bridge, and
yeah, and it,
you know,
it
I'm
was
sure
a big bridge to burn.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's going to be Metal Gear games are going to keep coming, but they're not going to be the same. And you know, I can't say definitively if I will be purchasing them or not. So I mean, Konami, I don't know what you're doing, Konami. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does, and that's part of the problem. But beyond that disaster that was the Game Awards in Kojima Konami, Bethesda opened a new studio in Montreal, and Gearbox countered by opening one in Quebec as well. So Gearbox opening in Canada, Bethesda opening in Canada, EA opening in Canada. I don't know if that speaks to maybe taxation and things like that, opening up in Canada, what the deal is with that. But it is kind of an interesting trend, because some big studios opening up in the Canadian provinces, especially with EA actually being in charge of the next Star Wars game. They're Motive Studios, I believe, is what it's called. Or is it Motive? I think it's EA Motive that was opened up in Montreal.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. You're talking about the one that Amy Henning is in charge
of? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the name of it is, I guess.
Yeah, it's the one that I sent you the website where they're accepting applications.
But no matter but no matter what, we need to see something from those guys as soon as possible. Like, if we don't see something from them at E3 this year, I am getting majorly concerned, because that has been in the works for, I mean, it's been over 2 years since they hired Henning away from, well, she was a free agent, obviously, but since she joined them from Naughty Dog, so we got to see something from them guys, like, yesterday.
Yeah, for real. Also, EA, in that same vein, they established a, quote, competitive gaming division, which will be headed by Peter Moore. He was actually a former corporate vice president for Microsoft. You might remember him from E3. He actually presented Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. He was Peter Moore. Kind of a big deal. They're going to be concentrating on the competitive gaming division market, which actually makes the Activision Blizzard thing even a little bit more interesting. Because if you got EA that interested in it, then it'll be kind of interesting to see if they establish a relationship themselves with Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, I mean, competitive gaming isn't going away anytime soon, and I think that's a good thing for all of us that love video games.
Absolutely. And the last story that we have for the 2015 year in review was actually Kojima Productions, rising from the ashes as an independent studio. I think the actual signing with Sony happened just before the new year or just after the new year, where Kojima Productions actually signed an exclusive deal with Sony. So, really, we've seen the death of Kojima Productions, the birth of Kojima Productions, actually, in that order. Beginning to end of the year, it was really the year of Kojima and Konami. I don't think that there's any denying that.
Yeah. No, they definitely made the most waves this season, or this 2015.
Yeah. So, what was actually the most surprising news outside of Kojima Konami for you?
Oh, man, I'm going to go back to E3 and that Microsoft saying backwards compatibility. I just don't think, I just had no clue that was going to happen. And I think it just made such an impact. And I think it really got Microsoft back on track as far as getting on kind of the same level as Sony up to that point. Sony had really been clobbering them up to this point as far as these current gen consoles. And I really think right off the bat, starting your E3 conference with that, I mean, it just gave Microsoft so much momentum this year, and it's huge, and that's the biggest and most surprising story of 2015 for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually threw it out on Twitter to get listeners and their opinions of what the biggest stories from 2015 were. And you can do the same. You can weigh in on any show by using the hashtag TunesGT on Twitter. If you don't know what that is, by all means, go to tuneshow.com and scroll down. In the middle of the page, you'll actually see a Twitter bubble that has hashtag TunesGT, and you can even just tweet directly from there, which will add that, I believe, automatically to the tweet. And Dominus Mom, who I know is Stevie, and who is one of my favorite people on the planet, she actually responded with some guy's wife leaving him because he played Fallout 4 so much that he lost his job and now he's suing Bethesda. That was actually one of the funniest stories, and I love that she sent it to me because I somehow missed this. But according to Yahoo News, Fallout 4 has been one of the biggest games of the year, one beloved by most of the series' most dedicated fans. A 28-year-old Serbian man is planning to sue Bethesda, the studio behind Fallout 4, because he did not know the game would become so addictive. The man played the game nearly solidly for 3 straight weeks. He skipped work, he lost his job, Then his wife left him, and his health physically deteriorated due to a lack of sleep or food. They have a quote from him in a statement: "If I knew that this game could have become so addictive, I would have become a lot more wary of it. I would not have bought it, or I would have left it until I was on holiday or until the New Year holidays." Now, he plans to sue Bethesda and the firm responsible for the game's Russian localization for 500,000 rubles, which equates to about $7,000.
You'd aim a little higher there, wouldn't you?
No. The law firm representing him is supporting the case because they see it as a test case, given that there's no current precedent. This is complete and utter bullshit, first off. But it's amusing bullshit, which is kind of fun. I don't know. I don't think there's any game that's willing, like, I'm ever willing to even cause, like, such a major issue, like, playing it. Even just an argument. Why would you play a game if your wife is going to even start to argue with you, let alone you're going to lose your job because you want to play it so much?
I will counter with this, Brian. If we had never heard of Tetris until 2015, and that just dropped, I could see this becoming a major issue, because when Tetris came out, I was probably, I don't know, let's say 12 years old.
Yeah.
I played Tetris every waking second I possibly could. If my dad didn't go make me, like, drive a tractor or sleeping or homework, I was playing Tetris.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that happened today, I might just, like, get up and have a full beard, my hair had gone gray, wife and kid, just dust everywhere. I could see this happening to me because Tetris was that addictive. Fallout 4? Nah, you know, it's not that great of a game. But, I mean, Tetris, yeah, I could see that happening with something like that.
Yeah, and in Tetris, actually, the music for Tetris made my Mount Rushmore of video game villains.
That's great.
Because, I mean, that game was very addicted. And just a couple of months ago, I actually watched live the Tetris World Championships, which was really kind of fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Much more entertaining than watching freaking ridiculous poker matches on ESPN5.
Or golf.
It's fascinating, and that's a good point. But yeah, kudos to you, Serbian dude, for having your entire family leave you because you just couldn't put the controller down.
You know, as hot as these Netflix documentaries have been recently with Making a Murderer coming out, somebody should document this guy's court case, because this would make for fascinating television to hear how this all plays out for this guy, to see if he gets his $7,000,
yeah,
his day in court.
Yeah, and $7,000. I wonder where he came up with that.
That's all his wife was worth to him, apparently.
Yeah, it's weird.
Did you say he lost his job, too?
Yeah, he lost his job.
Well, the combination of losing his job, his income, losing his wife, I don't know what else. I assume a bunch of other bad stuff has happened to him because of his obsession with the game. All that's just worth $7,000 to him?
Yeah. And how's he going to get a new job? I mean, because on your resume, you got to put why you left your old job.
Maybe he can be a tester for Fallout 5.
Yeah.
So he sounds to be the most qualified guy on the planet for that.
That's right. They wouldn't even have to pay him that much. But either way, just moving on to the next thing, because thank you, Stevie, for your input on that.
That's a great one.
Old School Heel, our good friend on Twitter as well, at oldschoolheel_, he said the biggest video game related news story of the past year would obviously be the Konami Kojima thing, and he said that and how much Fallout 4 sucks. he's not a fan. He's not a fan. He had some bad experiences, which really left a bad taste in his mouth to begin with.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like I said, the game gives you reasons to love it and hate it, and I can't blame you for either way. Whichever way you feel, and I really can't. I have a hard time finding fault in anybody's opinion of the game, because I think it's one of those face-sitting things that's a very polarizing subject, I guess you could say.
And Old School hated that early on. I mean, it never got its hooks to him. I mean, I think within the first, like 10 days or 2 weeks, he was already like, this game is just awful.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, huh? Everybody seems to love it, and this guy's crazy. And then he sat down and he explained to me why he doesn't like it. And, I mean, the guy makes some fantastic points.
Yeah.
And I get where he's coming from. And, you know, it kind of caused me to step back and step away from my fandom a little bit and be like, maybe this game isn't as great as I thought it was.
Yeah, and it really comes down to what kind of gamer are you? Because I'm a hoarder. And if you're a hoarder and an explorer, then the game is for you. If you're not, yeah. If you're more into action and more into continuous continuous action, and if you're all about a story being 100% cohesive, or at least not having as many holes, I find that I'm not paying as close attention to the story, the main story in particular, as I have in previous Fallout games, because I'm keeping myself so busy with the hoarding and building the communities and things like that.
Yeah, that the exploring, the hoarding, and the construction of the settlements has been the saving grace for the game, in my opinion.
It's completely immersive that way. And some people, if your goal is to really take in the story, then the story really is. It's lacking.
Yeah.
So I completely get it, too. I completely understand his perspective. The other input that I got on Facebook.com/ToonShow, when I put that question out, Mart, he says, I would say the love triangle that is Konami, Kojima, and now Sony. 20 years ago, the writers of Sunset Beach, which was kind of a soap opera-like thing, would have ditched the turkey baster impregnation for a story like that. Now, I'm not sure what the turkey baster impregnation is, but I can only assume that was just a bizarre plot thing. And further, I'm not exactly sure why Mart was watching Sunset Beach.
It's kind of like The Force Awakens. There's more questions asked here than we get answered for. And I cannot wait for Mart's sequel response to kind of elaborate on some of that stuff.
Yeah. Mart always has some of the funniest answers to questions.
Yes. Yes.
But thank you, everybody, for your input. If you'd like to add to the conversation, by all means, send us an email at toonsshow@gmail.com or use the hashtag ToonsGT, and we'll be sure to get that. Or just simply send me a DM or message or whatever it is that you'd like to send me, and I will do my best to get your opinion on the show. Thanks to everybody for that. And we're actually going to call it that a show, because this has been a long one, since we really covered a lot with regards to the top stories in 2015. I'm not going to review NHL 16 or anything like that at this point, or Citizens of Earth or anything like that. We'll just go into our close the show process, which involves Ryan telling us all about his website and how to get a hold of him.
Yeah, go over to game-block.com. A lot of review stuff coming up right now, a lot of games. I'm going to hopefully post a article about my 5 favorite movies of 2015. And we're going to be doing some preview stuff hopefully next week as far as what we expect to come for Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony here in 2016. Because just on paper, you take a look at the games and the hardware coming out this year. This has potential to be one of the biggest years in gaming forever. I mean, it could be just a complete game changer when you factor in the AAA titles coming, the indie movement is going to continue, and of course, virtual reality. We're gonna see how that plays out, and you'll get constant coverage of that over on GameBlock.
Yeah, it really is. It's gonna be a huge year. I know I'm looking forward to several games, and one of the reasons, 2015 was big. I can't even imagine how big 2016 is gonna be. Because there are still games from 2015 that have not even come close to touching at this point.
Yeah. The backlog is just getting so out of control. And, I mean, 2016 for me is really about games that we've been hearing about for so long, finally getting released, hopefully, you know, in The Last Guardian, the Planet Explorer. What's the Planet Exploration game that we've been hearing about forever? No Man's Sky.
Yeah, No Man's Sky.
That supposedly is coming out. You know, we've been hearing about that for, 3-4 E3s now.
Yeah.
So we'll finally get to see what that's like. Uncharted 4.
Final Fantasy 7. Games.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 7. I mean, there's so much that we've been hearing about for so long. These games have been in development for what feels like forever. I'm really interested to see how some of these play out. I might not necessarily be interested in the game themselves, but like Last Guardian, I'm very interested to see how that game is received at this point.
Yeah. It'll be interesting based on the fact that we have seen it for so long and how much fatigue actually has anything to do with its release.
Definitely.
So be sure to check out GameBlock.com. As he said, because he's got a lot on the plate to look forward to this year, and I'm sure that Ryan, you have a lot of great opinions. You've got a lot of great insight with all of your articles. I love going to the site every time you put up a new article because you go into so much more detail than I can ever, like, bring myself to muster and putting it down kind of on paper, per se. I'm like one of the people, I like to talk a lot. And if you get me talking about something, oh, I'll go off. We've had our conversations about Star Wars. Once I start, then I just kind of go. But you have a great way of putting it down on paper, and I can't seem to do that anymore.
Appreciate that, man.
Absolutely. As for this show and many other things, you can find everything at tuneshow.com. Two words, tunes, and then show.com. Also, trendingtopicsnetwork.com, you can find this and many other podcasts for your listening pleasure, as well as links to subscriptions on iTunes and RSS feeds and all that other fun stuff, which you can also find at tuneshow.com. Got some news potentially happening in the next couple of weeks here. We will keep you up to date on that. But for now, you can find me on Twitter at ToonsBrian. You can find Mr. Hamner on Twitter at RyHamner. That's RyHamner on Twitter as well. Also, are you on Facebook? Is GameBlock on Facebook?
Yeah, I can't remember the address off the top of my head, though.
Okay. Either way, I will get that address, and I will post it on Facebook for Toon Show, which is Facebook.com/ToonShow. So we'll get you all that information here over the next several days. This episode will actually be up later, which you're listening to it now, so you've already been made aware. But thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Toons Game Time. Until next time, he's Ryan Hamner. I am Brian. And thank you very much for listening.